You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. Each Monday at 11 a.m., this show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addictions. We will introduce you to specialized schools and treatment programs that can really help, and new innovations in the areas of health and security for your family. I'm thrilled to have, as my guests today, two talented and caring professionals in Larry Gasson and Dottie Laster. Larry and Dottie are principals in Strike Force Training, an organization that specializes in educating and training law enforcement, government officials, foreign governments, corporate enterprises, and others in recognizing and combating human slavery and trafficking. Larry, I'm glad to have you, and Dottie, we're going to bring you on now. If I click the right button, we should be just fine. Dottie is hey, we're going to resume the call. She is calling in from the East Coast. Dottie, do we have you on?
Hello.
Dottie, hey, we're glad to have you again. Hey, I want to tell you that after you were on the show last time, which for those that weren't listening was a few weeks ago, we've received calls and emails asking how they can learn more about what it is that you're doing. Some of the emails were people saying that they were just shocked at what was really going on out there, and shocked more that it was happening in our country. I felt the best way to do that was to just have you back. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Alan. I'm glad to be back and hope we can continue to answer those questions and put a stop to this.
Absolutely. And this time we have her partner, Larry Gasson. Larry?
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Good to see you again.
Hey, good to see you.
Hey, Dottie.
Hi. I like this radio because I've got my radio makeup and hair, and I feel like I'm right there in the studio with you.
All right. In other words, you're sitting in the kitchen.
With my fuzzy slippers on.
With your fuzzy slippers on. I love it. Well, one of the things that I want to do this time, of the questions that we got after the fact, some of them were also people saying, how come I didn't ask their question? Because we did get so many questions last time. So I want to jump into questions relatively soon this time. But the first thing I'd like to do is to have one of you, just for those that weren't listening last time, explain the problem again. Because it's huge.
Okay, well, just a brief overview, and then Larry, please fill in what you'd like to. Slavery is occurring all over the world, not only just in foreign countries, but in the United States. And so the term modern slavery also is the same as human trafficking. And human trafficking means that someone is held in service of another through force, fraud, or coercion, or absolutely any minor child involved in any commercial sex. That means commercial sex is stripping, pornography, and prostitution. There are more victims of slavery now in modern times than there were in historical times when slavery was legal.
In addition to that, Alan, that there are a lot of people that are taken into as labor slaves besides commercial sex traffic, and it's estimated that between 1.5 and 2 million people a year are trafficked. Between 500,000 and 2 million people a year, and it's estimated about 20,000 are trafficked into the United States every year, not counting those that are within the U.S. that are trafficked here, plus about 27 million people around the world are trafficking victims currently.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, those are the numbers that are just shocking, I think, and especially to Americans. Now, I know that in most any situation, there's usually a political controversy. It would seem to me that there would be no controversy in this one. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, when you're dealing with other countries, are you running into some that are fighting you?
Go ahead, Larry.
It's not
really a political issue that anybody disagrees with. Trafficking happens in every country upon the earth, and there are laws in most of the countries to fight it or against it. The problem is, in a lot of countries, there are people in high-ranking places who are involved in it. You don't quite have the government support in reality that's on the books, and that's what we have all over.
And my experience has been that absolutely, especially in the United States, I've seen amazing work on both sides of the aisle to create laws that are well-written, that are able to be well-executed, that call for what is appropriate in this situation, not only in penalties, but in victim services. I do see sometimes a misunderstanding of what trafficking is, and that's why it's so great that we're here with you today, Alan, to help clear up some of the misconceptions. We'll get into, I'm sure, more of those as we talk, but one thing is that I just hope that if the audience leaves with nothing, that they will remember that there is no such thing in the United States as a child that can be give their consent to prostitution. And I hope they can take that with them and remember that.
Well, and I want to share something that I pulled up, and I just pulled this up off the internet. But again, for those people that are thinking, well, gosh, is this really happening here in the United States? Okay, this is dated in October 2008. Okay, more children being sold for sex in San Antonio. That's San Antonio, Texas, folks. That's here in the United States. So understand, I mean, parents need to keep the lines of communication open with their children. It is happening, you know, everywhere. And from the standpoint of questions, I want to make sure that there's a couple of questions I want to get that came in. They actually came in the first time. They contacted me and said, wow, how come you didn't ask my question? So, and one of which I think is very relevant, and that is, are drugs and drug recovery a big part of what you do with your work? I would think that the people that are being trafficked would be dependent on drugs. Tell us a little bit about that correlation.
Well, drug traffickers and organized crime are getting really heavily into human slavery and trafficking. It is the fastest growing crime in the world, and it generates about $9.5 billion a year with a B of profits. Wow. For these organized syndicates, because communication is improved, because modern means of transporting people, of using computers, internet, cell phones, it's much easier for organized crime. They've already got the mechanism built in, or the vehicle, to move people around the world. And while they will use drugs sometimes as a means of keeping victims hostage or keeping them coerced, it's a different business.
Mm-hmm. Dottie, you want to add
absolutely
to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been on rescues with law enforcement or raids, however you want to look at it, where drugs were actually a part of the business and the trafficking was just one more product or service that these, actually in this case an individual group, was doing and providing and getting into. They'd only been involved in this, it appears to be, for several months, and they'd grown from one location to three in that period of time. So out of those locations, they were selling commercial sex from forced prostitutes and drugs, and then they were using the drugs to reinforce the compliance of the victims.
Well, and you just touched on one of the other questions that I was asked to make sure that I asked, which is, how much do you directly deal with those that have been rescued from slavery, and can the average person get involved in what you do?
Yes, absolutely. The first part of the question is, yes, I do deal directly with victims who have been rescued from this situation, and sometimes they've actually rescued themselves. And my role in leading several task forces in the United States has been to bridge that gap, to help law enforcement understand the new laws and train and be prepared for these cases and to make sure they're identifying them, and also to prepare the community and local resources to provide a comprehensive umbrella of victim services. Now I'm working in more of a different capacity, where I'm consulting with attorneys and consulting with organizations that help victims. So yes, I've kept my it's grown so quickly that I'm busy every day with victim issues.
And I think in the second half, and if you guys could go ahead and share now, we will do it again at the end of the show. But from the standpoint of how the average person can get involved, I think one of the ways you can do it is from the standpoint of making donations. I mean, if there's any place that they can make a donation, if there's anything that they can do to try to help for those that are working every day, they don't have time, you know, to actually get out there as Dottie is doing. You know, if you can give us some of the ways in which they can get in contact with you, and you can discuss further how they can help.
Sure, that's a great question.
Larry, I can address the donations, and if Dee could step in and talk about Strike Force, I think that would be great.
People can just donate
and get directly involved with Million Kids, and our website is millionkids.org. It's a single issue organization that focuses solely on human trafficking. And any money that comes into Million Kids goes directly to on-the-ground people that are doing the work. It's not eaten up in any other way except to help victims.
You know, Alan, there's another thing. That there are several aspects to this problem. There are, Dottie and I don't go across international borders and take machine guns like Rambo and rescue people out. There are people and organizations that do that. There's rescue, there's rehabilitation, there's reintegration into society. There are a lot of non-government organizations and private organizations that are involved in a variety of those aspects, and we work with and support a number of those. There's Youth for Human Rights International, there's the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation, there's millionkids.org, as Dottie's talking about. There's ASSET. There are a number of organizations that are out there, and it's a great question you ask, because when people hear about the problem, they want to do something. They have a need. And what they can do is go to our website at strikeforcetraining.org. We have some listed there. They can contact us by email or just go to the website directly to call. We're happy to help people do it. And the other way that people can get involved in doing something is at Strike Force, our primary focus is education and training, as you indicate at the beginning of the show, of law enforcement professionals, trafficking professionals, psychological health professionals that work with trafficking victims, because, for instance, a rape victim that gets brought into a hospital is going to have different symptoms physically and psychologically than a person who's just been raped. If they've been a trafficking victim for a long time, even just a short period of time, they're going to be brutalized. There's going to be different signs. But we offer some training programs, a variety of them. We offer a community training program for people. It's a couple hours long that want to go back and get involved in their homeowner associations, their PTAs, their school boards, and let people know that this is out there, because it is all around us in LA, Orange County, every state in the union here. We also offer some more extensive training for people that want to get involved with those organizations and actually maybe go out and speak. We offer programs from half a day to 3 and 4 days for actually law enforcement or people that are trafficking professionals that go out and train other people, and we will train them in a certified program. But if people just want to donate or help, they can get on the website, they can Google it, they can go to millionkids.org, and there's a lot of ways, and that help is desperately needed.
Okay, what is the email again to reach you?
info@strikeforcetraining.org will get to us.
Okay, again, that's info@strikeforcetraining.org. Yeah, at strikeforcetraining.org. That's O-R-G. All right. And Dottie, you want to add to that?
Yes, you can reach me through that same email address, or you can go to millionkids.org, and it has all the information to reach us that way as well.
Okay. Now, another one of our listener questions was, how do these girls and boys end up in such a terrible situation? And then there's a follow-up question, but let's start with that.
You want to start that one, Dottie?
Yeah. You know, in many different ways, but I guess if I could see what is common is that there is some way that they became vulnerable to someone who could exploit them. And an example of this would be a teen that ran away, or a teen that was being molested at home, that somehow the traffickers really can see that there's a vulnerability there, and they know exactly how to prey upon that. They use very targeted language and things to lure that person into their confidence. And once they have them away from family members or school or whatever social networks they have, then the roles change, and then it becomes absolute hell on earth. These men are very, men and women, but I'm thinking a lot of the pimps in the United States that actually recruit out of schools. I've seen, which is very shocking lately, where actually peers are being used by Panthers recruiters for other teams. And it's really important that parents be aware of who their children are talking to, who they're going out after school with, that they understand what people are around them at all times.
You know, go ahead. Alan, one other thing to note there, what Dottie's saying is that a lot of times these youth that are recruiting other people don't realize they're recruiting them for traffickers. They might think they're recruiting them for job opportunities, either here or abroad, to go do modeling, go do communications work, and they may be the ones that turn in their friends to traffickers and end up sometimes getting paid a reward, not knowing that that money has been paid by the person they've set up.
I'm really glad that you brought that up. And as an investigator, I mean, that's how we've run into these situations, is just what you've said, where somebody has been referred to a modeling agency and by people that really believe that that's exactly what they were going to be doing. And in some cases, they were referred to a legitimate modeling agency. The problem is that modeling agency, when they take the kids to another country, they take them abroad, and then they lease them out to another modeling company. Now, that modeling company that's based somewhere else may not be one that was checked out originally, like the people that referred them to this. I mean, we've had situations to where they were actually referred by someone connected to the school, and it was to a very legitimate modeling agency. Again, they get to another country, they're leased out, and they haven't checked out the credentials of this other company, and now before you know it, we have somebody who's not been taken. So
right.
I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I think those people don't realize when they're making those recommendations what really may happen.
And that's such a good point, Alan. What we do at Strike Force Training also is train on businesses' exposure to the illegal and criminal activities that their subcontractors may be doing. And in that particular case, that contractor, that original modeling agency, may be liable for what happened to those children. And can you imagine in the civil courts what that would look like for a business or their company? And it could be a restaurant company, it could be hotels, it could be, I've had a case out of Texas where actually public school administrative officials went to jail because they wound up getting involved with a trafficking organization. I don't know if they knew or not, but the law said they should have known.
You know, that's a key thing that listeners might want to know about is, you asked at the beginning, are other countries, there's a lot of opposition, this is a political issue. The U.S. passed the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, TVPA. I like to think of it as the Trafficking Victims Pit Bull Alliance, because it's a lot of times you hear about a little small dog that the bark is worse than the bite, but with this law, the bite is worse than the bark, only to the extent a lot of people don't know about it. But corporations, their management and their executives, if the company has any trafficking involved there at any level of the company, they can be held liable criminally and civilly. And that's why Dottie's pointing out one of the big things we do is training for them to help them prevent and have their staffs be aware of where they might be vulnerable, entry points, things that they can do to be aware of it, so that they understand if they participate and don't inform management that there can be severe criminal penalties, including life imprisonment. There have been in the hundreds of thousands of dollars of fines for executives and VPs of legal VPs of major corporations that we all know the names of, and it's an area that businesses have to be aware of, because if not, they can go to jail, even not knowing that someone 10 levels down below them is doing it.
Well, and to talk a little bit about the other side, I mean, I think people think about when they think about human trafficking or human slavery, they think about the sex trade. But let's talk a little bit about the labor side. I think the people out there don't really recognize that it's huge.
It's enormous. There's in a lot of other countries, that's a big aspect of it, where you'll see people that are children that are put in factories, that are held on agribusinesses, and they're there for life. Also, people might not realize that adult males are victims of traffic as well. It's men and women, boys and girls. Most of them by far are women and girls. But there are adult men that are strapping size that if they're in the wrong situation might be taken and put in a labor factory, a labor farm, and you'll never see them again. But in the U.S., that's also the case. You'll find some of them here. There's been some locally in Los Angeles County and Orange County that have been busted. And They're held there by coercion, by psychological methods, physical torture, sometimes burning. Sometimes their papers will be held if they brought into the U.S. And even if people are pretending to hold a real passport, it's called false documentation withholder, that's still a crime.
Mm-hmm. Right, and give a couple of examples of how they get into this, because I think, again, the average American is thinking, why not just go to the police?
I worked on a case based out of Texas where a man was brought, actually lured from Mexico with promises of healing medicine for his father's cancer. He was happy. He wasn't looking for a job. He wasn't trying to migrate for work. But his father was dying of cancer, and being the small village they were in, the only access they had was a curandero. And so the trafficker, again, apprising the situation, figured out what the weakness was he could exploit. So Houston is known for the MD Anderson Cancer Center. Many people do come to that area for cancer treatment. So what they did is kind of color the truth a bit. It is true Houston is a place to go for cancer treatment and cancer medicine. However, what they did is say, yes, we can get medicine that will cure your father. And even that didn't work right away, but his father's pain began to increase. He felt there was no other choice. So what they did was lure him to work in a restaurant. And it became apparent to him immediately after he crossed the border into the United States. He was held at gunpoint. He was extorted. Not only him, but his family and his dying father were extorted for more money, or they were going to kill him. They decided not to kill him, but to force him into labor in a restaurant. He worked in a restaurant that has a chain of 15 locations over the next couple of years. His father did actually pass away, and on that day, the coercion ended, and he fought back and tried to escape. He showed me pictures of him bloodied and beaten. They didn't let him go. They put him in the hospital for days, and they only let him go to the hospital because they knew he'd come back, because they were going to threaten to do the same to his family. So he did eventually escape, although the scars he suffered from that were actually one of the hardest cases that I've sat there and listened to. Very seldom do I have to excuse myself, and I did on this one.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, Alan, one thing you'd see in your line of work a lot, but these predators have perfected the predatory practices. They are professional criminals at the highest level of deception. And so just as pedophiles know how to prey on young children that look innocent or vulnerable, they know how to recognize them. These people know how to recognize situations like Dolly's describing, or the people. Another reason why they don't just get away, a lot of people are shocked that trafficking victims don't just leave, because they appear to have freedom to move around. But they are commonly shown pictures of their family back at home, young brothers or young sisters, and told that if they don't come back, the same thing will happen to them. And so most trafficking victims do not want that to spread and be perpetrated amongst their other family members or friends, so they just stay held hostage. And the most powerful chains that they use to hold victims in place are really psychological ones.
No, and I agree. And that's, again, you know, to the parents to understand, how does this affect me? Well, one of the ways in which it does is that's what the predators do with runaways. Runaways are a huge attraction to them, because they know that they already want to be away from their family, and they will start out by giving them things and giving them a place to stay and providing for them. But once they do that and they've got them in, now they can start using them either in labor or in sex. And you, as the parent, you don't find out, because your child has been shown pictures of you or of your other children and being told that they're going to be killed or that they're going to be injured. And so the importance of communicating with your runaways, if they run away and they come back, you need to sit down and talk to them to find out what happened. What were you doing while you were gone for 3 weeks? Because these things may have happened. They may have then gone ahead and run away. But they may have happened, and your child may not want to open up to you because they don't want to talk about that.
Exactly.
And that's a good point, Alan. I would urge getting help if you have had a runaway child. Statistics show within 48 hours they're going to be approached to sell commercial sex or to sell drugs. And once these predators have gotten their hooks into them, it's going to take more than one person to find out what happened. And it's very important. Traffickers do stay in touch with the victims, even when they've been rescued by law enforcement. It's one of the hardest things that I've had to deal with in the rescue side of working with victims.
you're talking about they're staying in touch with them from a threatening standpoint, or they're trying to suck them back in?
Absolutely, both.
Both.
And if you look at exploitation, if you look at The Art of Seduction, there's a great book called actually The Art of Seduction. You'll find that that someone that can get a hold psychologically on a person like this uses both tactics. They use nice tactics and they follow them with mean, and then they'll follow them up with nice. So it's kind of a roller coaster that keeps the victim off center. And they honestly sometimes don't really know what's happening to them. They know that they're something bad is happening, but they don't understand. They often think it was their choice, but it never was.
Right.
They just didn't have all the information.
Yeah, and I think for those that watch TV and they see the things that are used by the television pimp, that's not far off from what you're talking about right there.
It's mild.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let me go to another question. And it says that with so many people in slavery around the world, I was shocked to hear this. But do you find yourself, or it says, do you ever find yourself in a position to where you just feel overwhelmed?
It would be overwhelming to me to deal with this. It's the really, it's probably the seediest side of life that there is. And the only thing that keeps me going is that someone's got to make a difference and do it. And because there's an increasing number of people getting involved, NGOs and nonprofit groups, because we've been able to train at Strike Force, train law enforcement, other human trafficking professionals to see the interest and the publicity expanding, that people are becoming aware this is a problem. For years they haven't even known. And as you've said, people almost refuse to believe it's a problem here in the U.S., but because a difference is being made, and when you help save one person, it makes a difference. Like the story about the two men walking along the shore, and it's just the tides whirled out, and there's thousands of starfish upon the sea. And man picks up one and throws it back in, starts throwing another one. His friend says, "You can't possibly be making a difference." And he throws one and said it made a difference to that one.
That's
and every
right.
time you save one child or one adult, one person from trafficking, it makes a difference. And that's what keeps us going.
Mm-hmm. How
and I would say, yes, absolutely, sometimes, very seldom, but sometimes I do feel a little bit overwhelmed, and somehow, miraculously, a former client will call and leave a thank you message or send me something in the mail, and it's like they just know, they time it perfectly.
Mm-hmm. How has our economy affected this? I mean, is it increasing based on the fact that our economy is placing more people in a position to make more sacrifices? I mean, have you seen anything?
I believe it's increasing the demand as people get stressed and try to cut corners on the labor issue, or as well as the commercial sex. As they get stressed, they reach out for more vices, and either way, the traffickers are profiting. The businesses are growing exponentially. I talked to Alan with our common friend just recently, and he helped put a little bit in focus for me. He said the police need to close files, and that's really an important part of their job. And yet it's getting to where there's so many files to be open, they can't keep up with it.
Yeah, that's tough.
You know, Alan, along those lines of the economic aspect of it, it's a business that is not just by crime syndicates. You have mom-and-pop organizations doing this business, husbands and wives, pimps, and one of their victims will be like the supervisor that helps keep the other women in line if it's commercial sex. But it's a way, as Dottie's saying, when people are needing money, they'll do a lot of things that are either illegal or immoral by their normal standards, but that causes problems. The other thing is it is just becoming so profitable. You know, if you think about smuggling, they smuggle a person in. Sometimes that's the end of the relationship between the smuggler and the victim, and they've made their one-time fee. But with trafficking, it's like renting that person over and over and over again, and they will make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year off of one victim. So it's a great way for them to beat the economy. And, you know, my impression is most of that income is not reported, so it's tax-free. And it looks like a real killing to them. In other countries where poverty is so bad, you will find sometimes parents, sometimes knowingly, sometimes not, selling their children or providing them to traffickers to work in labor camps initially, thinking that it will help pay for the other four or five children at home. It's just a real heinous crime.
Mm-hmm. And what's the solution? I mean, you know, what's the solution? I mean, I know that you guys are doing the training. There, you know, which I think is incredible, because you're training the law enforcement not only in this country but in other countries. But more than that, what can the rest of the people do other than the donations, other than the communication with your own children? You know, help give them a path to see what is it, the direction that we can go that's going to help.
I would say absolutely everyone listening, if they could tell 10 other people, that would be huge.
There you go.
As you find out, your audience members may not have known this before we started talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Which is exactly what we've gotten. The questions or the comments that we've gotten back after the last show, if there was a common thread through all of them, it was a shock that it was happening in that in those numbers in the United States. That was the common thread out of most of the comments that we got.
Absolutely. The other thing I would add is that the awareness education is big, besides telling people, is for people to understand that a lot of their assumptions when they see prostitutes on the street, when they see other people that are typical victims of sex crimes, maybe they're working in massage parlors or things like that where you typically find this, they are not necessarily there by choice. A lot of people, when they see a streetwalker, they think, well, that's just her way of making money. That may be her way of staying alive for another day. And so when they change their mindset that a lot of these people may not be business people themselves but may be victims of traffickers, and just having that increased awareness, I think their antenna goes up. Sometimes when we train law enforcement, they realize in going back during the seminars, we'll ask, can you think about situations that might have been trafficking instead of another crime? And their eyes light up and they think that was probably a trafficking situation we walked right by.
Well, and I think one of the things that you shared both last time and this time is the point of their family. In other words, you just brought up about the streetwalker and they're thinking, oh, well, she's just made a decision in her life and so that's what she's doing. And somebody not thinking about the fact that maybe she has a child at home that somebody has shown her a picture of and said, if you don't continue to do this, we're going to kill that child. And from that standpoint, how does that person now go to the police if the place where they're working, if they see the owners interacting with the police, they tend to think that the police are involved in it because they may have come from a country where the police were involved in it. So I think that's
absolutely.
I think that's one of the key points that a lot of people that I've talked to. I just came back from, I was in Baltimore, I was in a conference, and people that had heard the show, they said that was the thing that was the click point in their mind of going, oh, that's how they're holding them. So.
Yeah, especially in a lot
right.
of other countries, they don't trust the government
too,
or police.
A lot of people get fooled by they appear willing or they smile or they're trying to seduce the customers in. Well, they actually have to, and I'm providing technical consulting on a pilot for an episode series where they're going to have a trafficking scene. And I asked the director, please, could you explain that smile? And he's doing so. So when you see that smile or that appearance of willingness, just imagine what you would do to appear willing to satisfy that next customer if it was your child that they were threatening.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Another listener question we have is, what kinds of programs are offered for recovery when someone is rescued from slavery? Larry, you want to take that?
Sure. Some of the NGOs are providing great services, and it really is a completely different way of doing psychological rehab and emotional rehab. But there are groups. We've worked with one that Rafa House that has set up homes in Cambodia where they're actually taking victims that are rescued, young girls from very young age up to the age of 18, and they teach them skills, trades. They teach them to read. They give them computer skills, sewing skills, things they can actually go out and do in a legitimate job. And a lot of nurturing, a lot of psychological counseling with professionals. It's a very long-term recovery process. But there are groups both abroad and in the U.S. domestically that are set up to work with that. And U.S., the Department of Health and Human Services is a great resource that people can go to as well. Going back to one of your earlier questions, they can go mm-hmm. on the website there and see other organizations that are helpful.
Yeah, and I think to add a little bit, after the last show, I looked up Rafa House, that one in particular. I looked up a few of them, but I looked up that one, and one of the things that I was really, really impressed with, and I think Pastor Carey talked about it a little bit, was the fact that the funds that are being brought into that foundation are going to not only teaching them skills, but paying for all of their expenses for a year So these people are being trained in another profession, and he named off a few different ones. But if you check it out, I mean, it's amazing that somebody can make a donation and know that not only has somebody been taken out of slavery, but they're being trained to do something completely different in an entrepreneurial fashion,
right,
that's going to allow them to grow and prosper for the rest of their life. And I was very impressed with that.
There's some great people out working on the problem again, which is why, you know, we think that a difference can be made and will be made.
Mm-hmm. And Dottie, you want to share something on that?
Yes, absolutely. The United States offers trafficking visas. They're called T visas for victims who are recognized through a several series of processes that they're officially recognized as victims. So they may stay here in the United States with a visa. The idea was to take away the tool the trafficker was using, which a lot of times is their illegal status, whether they were forced to come here or not. The other thing is that they may also ask for certain family members to be brought to the United States as well, because the government recognized that if we keep the victim here and they're still exploiting the family members, we may not have solved the problem. So they're called derivative T visas, and they can bring family members and children over also. They are considered refugees at the point where they're certified. So there's a whole host of program through the Refugee Resettlement Program that is absolutely some of the best work I've ever seen. I enjoy watching what immigrants see the United States, and so someone getting that fresh start, that clean slate to start in the land of opportunity, is quite amazing. Mm-hmm.
And Larry, why don't you share a little bit about the training? This is a very targeted audience, in the sense that, you know, I make a decision ahead of time who we're going to send the press release out to. So it has gone to investigators, but I also sent it out to some of the people who are in law enforcement, and they may be in a particular department that isn't doing this. So if you can talk a little bit about the Strike Force training, how long it takes, what it is that they're actually doing during that training, and how beneficial it is. I mean, and who it's really available to.
Great. One of the things that we see is that law enforcement is increasing. As their awareness is increased, they have people working on it. But a lot of times in departments, like we did a training a few months ago, and there was a detective there from one of the local police departments who was the only person. He was a homicide detective, but also was their trafficking expert. And it's just a shortage of resources because there hasn't been an awareness in the past of how expansive the problem is. But the training that we'll do for law enforcement professionals, for what we'd call healthcare professionals that deal with this, and the healing arts and issues, psychologists, sociologists, nurses, doctors, hospital people where they would see victims, we have a variety of different programs. But for law enforcement and trafficking professionals, we have a variety, again, of programs from a half a day to 4 days. Now, it's hard, as wonderful as law enforcement is, it's hard for them to get 4 days off to go through a consecutive training. So we kind of break it up and customize it different ways. And we could do it for groups or departments, or have individuals from different departments be sent to training programs. We did one in the spring that was fun. We called our Stomp Academy, and we did it in conjunction with the No Limits Mixed Martial Arts, which is a premier mixed martial arts facility in the country. And we had a half a day classroom training. There were law enforcement and human trafficking professionals there. And we educated them about the problems, awareness of it, things that they had seen that they thought were other crimes that they realized were trafficking. And then we had a half a day on the mats with them, with the world champions of Brazilian jiu-jitsu wrestling, and the knives and baton weaponry and stuff, so that they actually said it was as good or exceeded what they got in their academy. And it was really a lot of fun. It was a way to get them oriented towards the problem and get them involved a little bit.
Okay. Now let's take a company like mine. Okay, we not only are transporting teenagers from various programs, but we're looking for them as runaways. If I wanted to send three or four of my employees there to help educate them in recognizing the same things that you're talking about. You're talking about, you know, law enforcement going, wait a minute, I'm now realizing that when I picked up that runaway, or when I did that, that may have been a trafficking situation. You know, I think companies like mine should want their employees trained in that also. So if a company has just three or four that they want to get trained in that, you know, can they go to the website? Is there a schedule of when there's going to be trainings? How would we go about
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. We're revising the schedule now, but there's a description of the different training programs on the website there, Alan. And we welcome companies can send 1, 2, 3 employees, and they just be part of a group that's being trained at a given session. So that's something that we definitely do, because it's a good way to train people like your employees in the example you're giving.
Okay. So if half day is maybe the shortest training, what is the longest as far as how many days?
4 days, but that would be for people that are really heavy-duty law enforcement professionals, or people that are going to go out and do rescuing, rehabilitation. We go into interview techniques, because trafficking victims will typically not tell you the truth when you first catch up with them and help rescue them. So how to approach some different aspects so they don't ruin the legal aspects of the case. One of the things that we recommend is that they don't record their initial interviews with them, because it will be held against them, and that's usually when the victims are lying. Mm. They'll say, no, we're not trafficking, he's a wonderful person, he loves me, or he's my best friend. And then when they finally will break down and tell you the truth, and Dottie's had some experience with this as well, that you find out that he was a trafficker, but the trafficker's counselor, the defendants, the people defending him, will use that tape to say that he was not. So there's techniques to use in approaching and interviewing people to get them to trust. As you indicated, a lot of times they don't trust law enforcement initially, because where they come from, they're not trustworthy, or they may have walked right by them. One thing I think is really important, I'll make a quick point, is for people to realize that the Trafficking Victim Protections Act law is so strong that there are other crimes that people, that might look like other crimes being committed, that are really trafficking, or they're fronts for trafficking. And if they would normally get away or get off on the other crimes, they might be able to be held and get not taken off the streets if the trafficking laws were invoked for them.
That's
so recognition
great.
Is critical.
Okay, so and give us a couple more little tidbits. I like that from the standpoint of you know, for those of us with an investigative background going, wait a minute, we would normally want to record everything, but now we're actually potentially hurting our case. What would be some other things, some little tidbits of, you know, just a little teaser on the training from the standpoint of observing it, you know, when you're out in the field and recognizing it in a manner that we might not normally recognize it?
Dottie, you want to pick one of your favorite teasers?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to touch base on groups that would be really benefiting from our training. One would be investigators, as you talked about, that work for civil trial attorneys. Imagine if a prostitute and a prostituted minor can sue their pimp, and all the organizations that were involved in that commercial sex business. Oh. The hotels that were complicit, the taxi drivers that were enforcers, the companies that did the advertising. So I'm sending a teaser out to the civil trial attorneys to turn their resources into this field. It's wide open.
Okay. And wait, before you do that, I got to tell you, thank you. And you're now making me feel even smarter when I made the decision on the press release, because I also clicked on one of the lists that I have, so it is going out to attorneys.
Good move.
Excellent. So, good job, Alan.
So, good, good. I'm glad you
the
did.
The juries have come back with very, very large awards in these cases, so I'm game to help keep that trend continuing. We get also interpreters. Another training teaser for interpreters is we really need anyone who could bring their language skills to this field. It's always a high demand need when we get a case, and we need interpreters not just for the law enforcement portion, but also the victim services, getting the victims what they need, ordering. Sometimes we need to go get them to the food that they're used to having. So you can see it would be exhaustive for one or two people even to do it. However, when interpreters are first hearing the story that's coming out, maybe even during a law enforcement statement, we really need to prepare them for some of the things they're going to hear and help them to not react or to not to be comfortable with translating directly the words that they're going to hear. And that's what we practice on in the interpreter training.
Oh. Sometimes they're so shocked and overwhelmed that they won't repeat exactly what was said, and that damages the case. So we have to go through a lot of hands-on training with them for that.
And that is great. I'm glad. And you opened it up now to another group from the standpoint of interpreters, and I wouldn't have thought of that until you just brought it up. One of the nice things, I have a very dear friend that owns an interpreting company, and I hope she's listening. But, you know, from the standpoint of people that have called in or have emailed and said, how can I help? If you're speaking, if you are bilingual, if you speak multiple languages, that's one of the ways you can do it. Get involved from an interpreting standpoint, you know, to where you're going to be able to be in a very critical position in helping that person.
You know, Alan, as you know, courts will use trained certified interpreters, but one of the other little tricks to watch for is if victims are found or people are injured and you don't know if they're a trafficking victim or maybe a victim of, or if they're a prostitute or if they're a victim of sex slave, if the interpreter is needed and one just happens to show up on the scene that offers to interpret, there's a good possibility that that is their trafficker or someone involved with them, and they are not going to translate accurately. They're going to tell the law enforcement what they want them to hear and make it look like it's not a trafficking victim crime. So you want to bring in your own, as an investigator or law enforcement, you want to bring in your own interpreters that you know what their background and where they come from.
Excellent, excellent piece of information. Dottie, is there anything else you'd like to share?
Yes, one more group I'd like to address are religious organizations and how we could assist them in preparing projects or material for their congregations that focus on demand and how they can help spread values and understanding of the other, the marginalized people, whether it's immigrants or runaway children or prostitutes, how that we need to help make the community safe for them and not support sometimes, as communities do, the prosperous person that's exploiting the victims.
Now, is there anything else? I know that from the standpoint, we had some seminars done on terrorism, and one of the things they said is that, you know, when you, there are certain industries that when you're supporting those indirectly, you're sending money into terrorism, such as piracy and such. Piracy in other countries, a lot of that money ends up being fed right into terrorism. Is there a similar link to human trafficking?
There is, because so many businesses that have been legitimate businesses have been infiltrated by traffickers, things that you don't associate with sex or labor slaves, like construction, hospitality, restaurants, but as well as your massage parlors and things like that, which may be legal industries, but there's so many places that are infiltrated that money is really siphoned off for the traffickers to grow their business. It's like owning a copy machine and running it. The more money they have, the more people they're transporting across lines and putting them into business. One of the areas that I think people really should be aware of as far as businesses being trained is, Dottie mentioned hotel. If you look at a hotel, you might have a cab driver who's involved with traffickers, or the concierge of the hotel who's involved with traffickers, or someone in the kitchen at the back door, and it's real easy for someone to come take a victim, bring them up through the back door, a place of a hotel, and in a room on the third floor, you've got a 14-year-old girl, for instance, being trafficked all night long to maybe 20, 30, even 40 customers. And the management and leaders of the hotel, if they don't know about that and they haven't taken steps to prevent it, at least do all that they could to prevent it, so to a jury they look like they have, they could get civil and criminal penalties. So it's infiltrated all kinds of legal businesses.
All right. Well, as seems to be the case with this show, time absolutely flies by. So before we run out of time, can you again give your website addresses slowly in case there's somebody that is writing it down? Give the website address, give an email address or a phone number where people can get in touch, either to get involved in the training or to, if they have additional questions.
Sure. The website is www.strikeforcetraining.org. Strikeforcetraining.org. And we can be emailed, each of us, at info@strikeforcetraining.org. And if they want a number, the organization number is 714-573-4060.
That is great.
And then if they could check out Heritage Humanitarian Awards, that awards event is a cultural, cross-cultural fashion show and award ceremony at Marconi Auto Museum, February 22nd. 2009, and that's heritagehumanitarianawards.com.
Yes, and please check that out. And Dottie, I'm glad that you reminded me. I was planning on bringing that up. I also want to share with everybody, Dottie will be receiving an award there.
We're proud of her for that.
And yes, and I think it's incredible. And I love things to where the people that are out there doing it, they're doing the positive things out there, are being rewarded for it. So I'm very happy for you. I think it's very well deserved, and you know, you guys just need to keep doing what you're doing. I appreciate you coming on, and I think what I'm gonna, you know, I realize for everybody out there, this is a very, very heavy topic. Now you can also, if you want to come to our website, you can go to answersforthefamily.com. This show will be saved within 24 hours. It will be on the site. You can either go to latalkradio.com or answersforthefamily.com. That's the numeral four. Go to the website. Every show is saved. There is an archives that you can go back to. And after a show that's this heavy, I also suggest that you go and listen to the show where we had Florian Schlosser. Florian will help you calm down. If you listen to that show, he takes us through a level of sort of looking inward into the truth of what's going on, and you really will come away much more relaxed and feeling very good about your surroundings, I think. But again, I thank everybody. Please continue to listen. It's 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Every Monday, we will be on here, and we will continue to bring you Answers for the Family. Thank you both.
Thanks, Alan.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Daddy. Bye.
Nailed it.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.